This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand. It's easy to take for granted the ability to record sound, whether it's on cassette tapes, voicemail, or even a child's toy. But before the end of World War II, most sound recording took place in studios. The only way to record with any kind of fidelity was by engraving sound onto a wax cylinder or disc. After the war, a GI brought a piece of Nazi technology back to the U.S. And 55 years ago tonight, magnetic tape recording made its debut on American radio. In the third installment of Technopop, the Secret History of Technology and Popular Music, NPR's Rick Carr reports.
When the red light went on in an old-fashioned studio and the musicians were actually recording, what they played was what they got. There was no way to go back and re-record a bad note. David Baker is a jazz cellist, professor of music at Indiana University in Bloomington, and director of the Smithsonian Jazz Masterworks Orchestra.
I was told very early, if you make a mistake, mess the recording up right away. Scream, you know, hey! So everybody knows it was there, rather than waste that whole time and then go back and find that there was a mistake.
That's because once a stylus started cutting the wax that was used for recording, there was no way to go back and record over what you'd done. If a musician messed up, the recording engineers would literally break the master record and start cutting wax from scratch. There were other ways of recording, but they didn't sound as good as discs. Bing Crosby helped change that.
Someone waits for me.
Welcoming you to the world premiere of Philco Radio Time, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter, his orchestra and chorus, the Charioteers, Lena Romay, Skitch Henderson, and starring Bing Crosby.
At the end of World War II, Crosby was a movie star, a chart-topping singer, and most significantly to this story, host of one of the nation's most popular radio shows. Crosby biographer Gary Giddens says the trouble was Bing was bored with the routine of a live weekly radio show. He wanted to record them in advance.
Bing wants to record because Bing wants to be in control of his time. Bing wants to be on the golf course when Bing wants to be on the golf course. He wants to be traveling, he wants to be in New York. He wants to do what he wants to do.
In the late 1940s, this was heresy to the people who ran radio networks. They reasoned that the attraction of their medium was that it was live, like theater. What if Der Bingle started skipping in the middle of a ballad on national radio? Crosby countered that during the war, he'd recorded shows for members of the armed services and that those recordings had been very popular. The big networks weren't buying.
NBC won't allow him to do it. CBS won't allow him to do it. So there's this tiny little also-ran station, ABC, that was created because the FCC forced NBC to sell off its second network because of accusations of monopolistic practices. He goes over to ABC, instantly making ABC a major network.
Bing recorded the new show to discs, but they didn't sound very good. His audience shrank. Meanwhile, a young audio engineer from San Francisco named John A. or Jack Mullen had recently mustered out of the service, having liberated from Europe a machine built by German engineers called a magnetophone, as in magnetic sound. It was the world's first modern magnetic tape recorder. Recording sound as patterns of magnetism on metal had been practical since the end of the 19th century, but none of the technologies sounded very good. During the war, German engineers tweaked existing concepts and ended up with a machine that sounded better than discs. Crosby's producers invited Jack Mullen to Los Angeles to demonstrate. In an interview with NPR prior to his death in 1999, Mullen said that they flipped when they first heard tape.
They were amazed at the fidelity. You couldn't tell that it was a recording from the live performance. I have a switch on those machines that you flip back and forth. One side you're listening to the live performance and the other you're listening to the instantaneous playback of the tape, and you couldn't tell which was which. They had never heard of such a thing before. So I never did get back to San Francisco. I had to take up residency in Los Angeles and immediately went to work doing Crosby's show on tape.
On October 4th, 1947, ABC aired Crosby's first show of the new season. It had been taped weeks before by Jack Mullen.
Someone waits for me.
Not you!
Carpenter welcoming you to Philco Radio Time, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, the Rhythm Ayers, Peggy Lee, and Bing's guest, Gary Cooper. And now, fresh from a 3 months vacation, here is Philco's last rose of summer and the first pumpkin of October, Bing Crosby.
Thank you, Ken.
Biographer Gary Gidden says the show's engineers kept amazing Bing and his staff with what they could do with the new technology.
They've got a very limited amount of tape, most of which they've taken from Germany, which they use over and over and over and over again while the 3M company is trying to figure out how to make this stuff. So at one point, they do a show and they're like 20 seconds short. Now, radio has to be to the second.
Because of the tape shortage, Mullen had been saving every scrap, including snippets of laughter and applause, which came in handy to fill that missing 20 seconds. They proved useful again a few weeks later when a comedian's jokes fell flat. Canned laughter and applause were gone.
Well, I ought to be riding my moose. He's got a built-in music rack.
Hey, you better get him a card in the Moose Ishin Jr.
Oh, I love these wide-open spaces. Just smell that air.
That air what?
That air jokes. Hey.
Biographer Gary Gidden says tape encouraged some performers to go farther out on a limb. If a bit truly flopped or was a little risque, Mullen could just razor blade it out.
It was tremendously liberating because a lot of comedians, for example, would take chances they wouldn't have taken live. And then we'll say, well, we'll see if they put it in. You know, maybe it'll get past the censors, maybe it won't. Whereas when it was live, you wouldn't even take a chance because it might end your... Nobody would ever hire you again if you got the reputation for doing that.
Tape allowed musicians in record company studios to play through a song a few times, chancing it on every take, then edit together a perfect rendition using only the best bits of each take. As tape technology developed, it gave musicians the ability to record each instrument individually using an innovation called multi-track tape. Pretty soon, there were no more bad notes on records. Some critics say that the ability to perfect the final product has diminished recorded music. Crosby biographer Gary Gidden says we no longer hear musicians struggling to come to terms with the music they're playing. But most musicians tend to say that whatever tape's taken away from recorded music, it's added more. It's allowed amateur musicians to record at home. It's a sketchbook, a way of archiving even trivial ideas. And it's a teaching tool. Tape came along at about the same time as two other innovations that shook the music industry and resulted in what Elektra Records founder Jack Holtzman calls the Big Bang.
The development of high-quality, low-cost, and relatively portable tape recorders in price ranges of from $600 to $2,000, the invention of the LP record, and the final choosing and establishment of an FM radio band.
Bing Crosby became a superstar during a similar technological revolution. The electrical process made for clearer, more subtle recordings. PA systems in theaters meant he no longer had to belt to the last guy in the last row of the house. And AM radio brought him into America's living rooms. Crosby may have seen in magnetic tape an opportunity to pay back his debt to technology. He invested thousands of dollars in a little company just south of San Francisco called Ampex, which set to work developing its own magnetic tape recorder. In essence, Crosby was a venture capital angel not far from Silicon Valley. Rick Carr, NPR News.
More information on the early days of tape recording, the changing sound of American popular music, and the Technopop series is available on our website, npr.org. It's 11 minutes before the hour.